Hello, everyone. Welcome to Living the Breakthrough, T1D Stories, where we have conversations with people who break through the challenges of living with T1D to achieve whatever they want in life, both big and small. My name is Adrian Gonzalez, and I'm part of the Greater New England chapter of Breakthrough T1D. And my guest today is Lori King, who, like me, is originally from Brooklyn, New York, until she moved to Maine many years ago. She was a public school teacher for 46 years and has lived to tell about it. During her time as a teacher, Lori organized Flannel Fridays at her school in Yarmouth, Maine. And this was an annual fundraiser where Lori would make a donation to Breakthrough T1D, which was formerly JDRF, for every person who wore a flannel, who wore flannel, flannel shirt, flannel pants, whatever, any flannel, she would make a donation, to Breakthrough T1D that day. So I was tempted to wear a flannel shirt for today's episode, right?
So
But
was I, but it's too hot.
yes, exactly. It's 90 degrees outside, so I quickly nixed that idea. So with that, Lori, welcome to Living the Breakthrough.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Great. Well, let's begin like we always do on this program, right? Which is at the beginning of your T1D story, right? So when did you get diagnosed with, type 1 diabetes? Maybe if you can remember, what were some of the symptoms that you were experiencing that led to diagnosis? And what do you remember about that day?
Okay, so I would it was June 24th, 1975. I happen to remember the date because it happened to be my mother's birthday. But I think that I had been not feeling well for maybe 6 to 8 weeks before I finally went to the doctor. And I think if you open up the book to like textbook symptoms of getting diabetes, that's what I had. Except that every week something else came on. And I was always able to explain one symptom after the other. So at the beginning, I was thirsty. So I drank a lot of water during the day, whatever at night. And then I was going to the bathroom much more often than than usual. And then my eyes got blurry. So I was like, okay, well, they're blurry because I'm tired because I'm up all night going to the bathroom. And I'm trying to think what other symptoms came up. I think what happened was I started to get pains in my calves. And that symptom didn't make any sense because I wasn't exercising, a lot or anything like that. And so, between all of those, that didn't make sense. I also had lost 20 pounds in like those 5 or 6 weeks. And having always been a little bit chubby, whatever, I wasn't exactly upset about the loss of weight, but I felt like, well, I had started a new medication, whatever. And I thought, well, maybe that's why. And I kind of put that one to the side. But when I went to the doctor and he said, what's bothering you? And I made this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 list. He had me, take a urine test, but I think he automatically knew what I had.
Yeah, so this was 1975. So this is 50 years ago now. So you've been living
Yes.
with T1D for 50 years. And now, how old were you when you got diagnosed?
I was 18.
So you were
I was
18.
18.
Okay, so 18 years old. You remember the date because it's your mom's birthday, right?
Birthday,
So not exactly the best of birthday presents.
right.
And so we always call that here. So my daughter's diaversary is October the 4th,
Okay.
2011. And we always joke that, it's not necessarily a day you celebrate, but it's certainly a day that you remember and recognize. So it
Yes.
sounds like, yes, you had all the now, were you sick? It didn't sound like you were very sick at the time to like, were you hospitalized or did you just start getting
No,
treated at home?
I think I had classic symptoms, and I don't quite remember the numbers. I feel like the numbers might have been like in the 300s, but not in the 500 or 600s. And my father's mother, at the end of her life, had to take insulin. She just got it very late in life, so my father knew how to give an injection. And I think between the fact that I wasn't, so sick and that my father could help with the injections at the beginning, I think that's why they allowed me to go home. But I remember the doctor, the GP, just basically setting me up. He said, I have a guy who specializes in diabetes. And that doctor made room for me the very next day. And I always remember that he must have spent an hour and a half with me in the office. And I thought to myself, whenever I come to his office, I won't care how long I have to wait in the waiting room because I think that other people were in the waiting room. But he really laid out everything quite clearly to me, but also helped us understand. I think
Yeah.
I thought I was going to take pills because I was young. So I did say, well, can't I just take pills? And they were like, No, and I think he might have said something like, you'll take insulin for the rest of your life until we figure out something else. So
Right.
I remember those things about it.
You know, I think it's pretty impressive that, 50 years ago that you had, number one, a general doctor that, number one, was familiar with type 1 diabetes and knew who to refer you to kind of a specialist. I assume it was an endocrinologist or someone like that. And that you were immediately kind of put on this treatment plan and got the, kind of the help you need and set on the right path. Because, I mean, we've had other folks in the program that were diagnosed, not that long ago. And, their primary doctors, when they went to the doctor because they had were having symptoms, didn't know what, they were misdiagnosed or whatever the case might be. So, in many ways, it's great that your doctor kind of was, had that on his radar, knew what to do, and then you got that care. I mean, it was similar to my daughter's doctor as well. Once he did the urine test, then we saw an endocrinologist almost that same day. So,
I think,
go
I
ahead.
mean, there's a lot to be said about a quick, efficient diagnosis, because I think it did make a difference at the beginning, although we may talk about it later. But how I treated my diabetes 50 years ago doesn't look anything like how I treat it today. So yes, I knew what I had, but I don't but we didn't have the ability to control it the way we do today.
Right. Well, that's my next question. So perfect lead in. I mean, yes. I mean, 50 years ago, a lot has changed. I mean, a lot has changed just in the, 14 years that my daughter, was diagnosed. I can, I 50 years, a lot has changed. And can you share with us, I mean, some of the changes you've made over the decades and why?
Yeah, I think that's really a good question. What I recall back then is that we did not have blood tests. So you had a little chemistry set. It was very cute, a couple of test tubes with you would put the urine in and you would drop a tablet in. But my recollection is that all it would tell me is if I was like low, okay, high, or very high. So that's all you really could know about it. And that's all you had. So it gave you somewhat of an idea, but unless you went to the doctor and did a blood test and had your A1C and things like that, you really didn't know how you were doing. So that was the beginning of it. There were no blood tests, so we didn't have that immediate sort of information.
And
I
how
think
often did you do that urine test? Did you do it like in the morning when you got up? Did you do it throughout the day or?
that's a great question. Now that you asked me that question, I probably didn't do it often enough because I remember doing it like if we were going out to dinner or something, I would do it to make sure that I knew what I was having before. But I believe also that I may have only been on NPH at that time for quite a few years. So it was only long-acting insulin. So you didn't really do a lot like, oh, my blood sugar's, 75. I'm not going to take a big shot for having this piece of fish and rice or what have you. When I think back, I don't think we could watch it as carefully. So, what you did know back then was when you were having a reaction. And also because of the fact that in the 50 years, my primary symptoms, the hand shaking, the sweating, they come through, but they don't always come through. Now I've got kind of the secondary ones. You get cranky, you get discombobulated, what have you. But what we didn't have back then was you really had no idea when you were really bottoming out. And I think when I think back to, I think I met my husband in 83, so I'd had diabetes 8 years. But when I think back to some of the quote unquote bad reactions that I had, it would have been really nice to know that I was going that low. So that was the other cap thing that was a little harder. So I did that for like 10 years. During that first 10 years, blood tests came in. So that was great. And I think maybe during that time too, some regular insulin came in. But again, you're still taking the NPH, the long-acting shots and the regular insulin. And then I think it was 2000 that I finally succumbed to getting a pump. Doctors had wanted it for a few years before, but I thought my control had been good and I didn't really want to necessarily try something new. So again, in retrospect, sorry I waited so long, because getting the pump, I think, was one of the monumental changes in my diabetes care, control, and comfort. Because you could get up in the morning and look at your see what your blood sugar is and then say, you know what, I don't feel like eating right now. I'm just going to hang for a while. So I think because for a lot of years I had that have to have breakfast at 8, have to have lunch at noon, have to have dinner at 6. And so I think that pump was that big difference. And of course the CGMs, make all the difference in the world. So it's just like, oh, that's what I am. It's funny because before we started the interview, I checked to say, okay, let's make sure I was 151. I'm like, nope, not going to correct it or anything like that. To 151, I'll be fine the whole interview.
Yeah, no, it's amazing, that whole transition, not only with the types of insulins, right? Back then, really just that long acting, right? So not really bolusing or anything like that. Now, there's been so much advancements in insulin over the years, and then the pumps. And today we've got not only just the pumps and the CGMs, but those two things talking to each other to kind of have that closed feedback loop. I mean, do you have that? Do you have that closed system or
I do have
no?
the closed system. I just don't use my phone for it.
Okay.
I could talk about after, but I don't choose to use my phone. I choose to look down. It's okay to just look down and see what I am. But yeah, that was a really good, it was such a distinct step in the right direction. And I think I'm trying to think about lost my train of thought for a second. Well, it'll come back to me.
Yeah,
Go
if it
ahead.
comes back, feel free to raise it back up again. But I think I love what you said because I think, really, I think a lot of these advancements is really to, I think the way I look at it is, diabetes, type 1 diabetes is, in the past was so constraining. I mean, it still is in many ways, but it was so constraining. Like you said, you had to be very regimented about when you ate and, and things like that because you really didn't have much to control. You didn't have much visibility to what your numbers were. So you had to do the best you can. And I think with the technology today, we're getting closer and closer, although not there yet, because the body's going to do what the body's going to do. But at least you've got greater degrees of freedom and flexibility that just didn't exist not that many years ago. Kind of shifting
And
gears a little. Yeah, go ahead.
it much more mimics a normal quote unquote life with insulin. It much more mimics a normal life
Exactly.
in terms of, I can go through a whole day and not necessarily have a number above like 175 and not have any lows. And that's like, ooh, that was a nice day. The thing didn't beep at me at all.
That's great. Yes, the beeps. The not having the thing beep at you is definitely a bonus there. One of the things that you shared with me when we first talked is that you never kept, diabetes a secret. That is, you never you've never been reluctant to share with others that you have, T1D, including with the kids that, you used to teach in the classroom. Why do you feel that, being open about having type 1 diabetes is important? And were you ever concerned that people might treat you differently as a result?
So again, good questions. I think that my own innate personality is that I'm an open book. So I talk to people about a lot of things and my students and everything else. So I think that people know who I am. I think from the very beginning, I felt like if I didn't let people know that I was diabetic and could have a low blood sugar reaction that would look like A, B, and C, that I could put myself in danger. I could be with someone I don't know. So even now, if I go to like a dance, not a dance class, but a gym class or someplace where people don't know me, I'll just go up to the instructor and say, just so you know, I'm diabetic. I'm fine. I have my pump on. My sugar is fine. But if I pass out, if something happens to me, I want you to know that that's what it is. And I think everybody's appreciative about it. I cannot tell you how many people I have introduced to my diabetes and talked about it. And then either they get it or their kids get it. And that's another thing that I like to, especially at 50 years with diabetes, I like to be able to say to people, I always say the disease stinks, but it's absolutely something you can live with. And that's what I'll tell kids who get it. Yeah, this is a pain in the neck. Yeah, this is stinky, but there are so many worse things. And this is something that, with a little bit of effort or a lot of effort, you can control. And I think that's probably why I share so much about it. And in every school I taught in, I would leave juice boxes and candy all over the place. Just because let's have it in every classroom I'm in. And even my 2-year-old grandson, when I go to get like the glucose tablets, he calls me Lolo, but he says, Lolo's medicine.
That's
So he
great.
knows that that's, he can't have it. It's what I use to get up. So I don't know. I don't think I ever felt like people would judge me differently from the diabetes, even 50 years ago. You know, I smile when I think about what was the first thing I learned? Mary Tyler Moore had diabetes. They kept trying to give you the names of people who had diabetes who were doing fine. And I think they still do that today. But I honestly can't say that there was ever a time that I felt like I would be discriminated against or looked at differently because of my diabetes.
No, that's great. You know, I think my daughter kind of approached it the same way too. I mean, I think not long after she was diagnosed, which was going into the sixth grade, you know, she gave a presentation to her sixth grade class to let her let them know like what she was just diagnosed with, you know, what that means, like what type 1 diabetes means, and then what she needs to do, and kind of share the symptoms of being high and the symptoms of being low, and why she might have a juice box with her, why she might need to eat some candy, you know, during class or whatever the case might be. And you know, she then ultimately went to speak to here where we live. They had a program called Understanding Our Differences, which had people with all sorts of differences, whether they could be physical or mental or whatever the case might be, and kind of present to children at schools just to kind of help educate them about folks that are living their lives with, you know, different conditions. And she did that for a number of years, and it was great. She just loved, you know, teaching, and I think that transformed her. You know, that gave her a sense of confidence to, you know, to be able to talk about it. So I think same with you. I think that because I think it, and it's a natural reaction. I think it's a common concern, particularly when you're relatively young, whether you're a kid or, you know, you don't want to be different. You don't want people to maybe, you know, make fun of you or something like that. So there could be that tendency to say, you know what, I'm just not going to talk about it. And I think that's fine too. For some people, that's probably the right, you know, path. But at least in my daughter's experience, and it sounds like it was the same with you, it was like, okay, yeah, it became a non-issue, and like none of our, you know, her friends still treated her the same, and everything else. It was like, you know, thanks for letting us know, okay, and let's move on. So.
I think it's really nice, neat in our school system because I worked in Yarmouth for the last 25 years of my career, and we have diabetics in every school from kindergarten through high school. And so, with this last Flannel Friday that we had, and actually, so I donate money for every kid who wears flannel, but then we also accept donations from everybody in town. So we went townwide this year and people were wearing flannel and they would just send in donations. So this year was like our biggest fundraiser because we involved the town and some classes were like, I have one class where a teacher has a diabetic son and her class donated like $100. They just all brought in coins and whatever.
That's
So
great.
everybody is in it. But in my high school, I do an assembly where I get up and I talk about, hey, this is my 50th anniversary and thank you so much for doing this. And then I say, if you're diabetic and you're willing to come up here, come up here. And I think we had three or four, I can't remember, kids that come up. Cause some kids who are really shy about it, but I think this one girl just finally felt like, okay, I can do this. And then I went to every single, there's three other schools. I went to every single school and I personally met each diabetic. Because again, you just want to say, you know, you can live with this for a very long time because certainly the kids in K-2 thought I was old, you know,
Right,
very old.
right.
Hey, I can live
Well,
as long as you can with the gray hair. Okay.
yeah, I think that's the sad thing is that, I mean, I remember hearing someone say that, a doctor say that, you know, it wasn't that long ago where a pediatrician can go his entire career or her entire career without, you know, having a single patient that had type 1 diabetes. And now, unfortunately, it's so much more, you know, common. And I can tell you the number of times that, you know, I go to restaurants, my wife and I go to restaurants, whatever, we see someone with kind of an insulin pump or a CGM, right? So I think that's part of it as well. I think that unfortunately, because more folks are getting diagnosed, not only children, but obviously, I think more than half the people getting diagnosed today are adults. You're seeing, you know, evidence, if you will, of people living their lives with type 1 diabetes, you know, wherever you go, whether it's restaurants or theme parks or just walking around, you know, down the streets. You know, speaking of my daughter, I mean, I know one of the things that used to annoy her when she was younger was, you know, my wife and me asking her frequently, you know, how are your numbers today? You know, were they high? Were they low? And you know, so I think there's a tendency for people living with T1D, and for parents of children with T1D to kind of hyper focus on the numbers, right? To strive for perfection, right? To be in that control, range. And I think this tendency is arguably worse today because, thanks to continuous glucose monitors, as we talked about, we have ongoing real-time visibility to blood glucose numbers. I mean, is this something that you have dealt with? I mean, what's your perspective as someone who's, again, been living with T1D for half a century on striving for perfection?
So I think that in my, my teaching career, the word perfection is sometimes a dirty word. Like we don't want kids striving for perfection because it's almost like an ends to disappointment. Nothing is ever going to be perfect. I think that certainly my first years with diabetes, when we didn't have the blood test, whatever, there was no such thing as perfection because you didn't technically know what's going on. Now you could go and get your A1C and it's like, oh, it's 9.7. Oh, I guess I wasn't doing that well. Or you go back and there's a lower number. You thought, okay, I was doing better, but you really didn't have a good idea of what you were doing. I think that what happened with the CGMs and all that is that I always tell kids that you cannot strive for those perfect numbers for a couple of reasons. One is my doctor, the one who saw me at the very beginning, the one who said to me, you have two choices. You can accept diabetes, learn all about it, and live a pretty great, healthy life, or you can ignore the disease, you're in college, drink, do all kinds of bad things, and have a much sooner, not pretty death. I mean, that's basically how he put his two hands out. And I think that one of the things that he always said is that it is really about balance. So I can have a 250 on a day. It's not going to kill me. I can have a 30, not 30, but a 55. It's going to be okay. But if you can, for the most part, keep the numbers pretty steady, I can't panic over a high or a low because it's only going to make me more self-conscious and more crazy about it. I mean, we have parents at the high school who, the nurse has the connection and the parents have the connection and the parents are, maybe calling in when it's 75 and there's just like, the kid's with me right now. He's having his snack. He's okay. And I remember one kid in particular who his A1Cs used to put me to shame. They were like fives, for all of the years he was doing, in school. But now when I see his parents, they're like, he won't tell us anything about his numbers anymore. Like he's on his own. And I think that is the longer you go by keeping your diabetes in relatively good control, the less chance you have of the side effects, which is what everybody is looking out for. The only other thing too that concerns me about watching numbers too carefully is that you tend to overcompensate on getting your numbers down. So I'm 110. I eat something. I'm 180. It's been an hour and a half, 2 hours, and I'm like, uh-oh, I got to take something. And then I take something, but that 180 was on, it was going to come down. And then I go down too low. So if you hit every high, mostly high numbers, not so much low, but if you hit every high number immediately, you're probably going to have some bigger hits that you don't need. I think it's just, you got to just seek balance with your numbers. Don't ignore it. I mean, the kids are always like, I don't understand how you do this. And my explanation is, exercise and insulin are negative, food and stress are positive. All I can do all day long is to try to keep that zero balance. A kid will see me eating a whoopie pie, a small whoopie pie, not a big one. And they'll say, how can you do this? And I'm like, my sugar's 110. The whoopie pie is 30 grams. I'm gonna do it. And so I think that for me has been like the driving force that I just need to maintain the best balance I can.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And I think that the reality is, I mean, striving for perfection in all aspects in life is not a good way to live life, but especially with, type 1 diabetes, because I think, as you pointed out, there's only so much you can control, right? I mean, you could be having a stressful day. Maybe you are very physically active. There are sometimes you just don't even know. You can have, I remember, what my endocrinologist told my daughter. He says, you can eat the same exact thing for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day at the same time every day, and your numbers are going to be different every day, right? So even if you did that, if you try to control it that much, it's just going to be different every day because, your hormones are changing, you're growing, you're more active, you're worrying more, you didn't get enough sleep last night, whatever. There's so many variables.
Right.
that you know that we know about and variables that we don't know about, right? So you can drive yourself crazy trying to, hyper focus on it and try to control it to that extent. And I think obviously today with the closed loop systems and everything, that helps because the system
Yeah.
itself is trying to keep you in that, healthy range as best it can.
And you have to trust the system. Having been diabetic for so long, sometimes I don't trust the system and I get in there and try to mess. And like my, diabetes person will say, "Why did you do that?" Like the system knows what it's doing. You have to give it a chance. But when I was younger, we used to call it the sugar fairy. Sometimes the sugar fairy just visits. And even though you didn't eat poorly or you didn't do anything that you thought was wrong, all of a sudden your number was up there and you have no idea why.
Right. Yeah. Some questions just don't have answers to them. And that's just the way it is. Well, Lori, this has been great. I mean, I think we could probably, talk for another hour or so, but maybe as a way to wrap up, let's wrap up the way we always do. And that's looking ahead to the future and a future that we all can't wait for. And that is a world without, type 1 diabetes. I mean, what would that world mean to you, a world without type 1 diabetes?
So I think simply it would mean a world without a lot of as much thinking in my head about every movement of every day, because although I don't think about it 24/7, it is 24/7. I think it'd be really interesting not to be attached to things. Eventually I'm going to need hearing aids and my kids are like, "Maybe you can get them sooner." I'm like, "I'm already attached to two things. I don't need to be attached to a third thing." I think for me, I have one grandson, both his maternal grandfather and me are diabetic. So if there's a cure, then we don't have to worry about genetically him picking up on anything. And I just think it'll be a much easier place for, I don't know, are there millions of people with diabetes? I don't even really know the number. There must be around the world. There must be millions around the world that have diabetes.
Yeah, and unfortunately, more and more, getting diagnosed,
Yeah.
each day. So, but that's wonderful. I think, particularly, obviously, you've done something right. You've lived a healthy life for 50 plus years, living with type 1 diabetes. And I think to, find a cure and prevent your grandson and other kids out there, as well as adults, that are predispositioned, predisposed to getting diagnosed. For having to live with this disease, I think is a great objective. So Lori, I wish you many more years of fantastic health with your grandkids, and definitely want to thank you again for making the time to be with us.
Well, I'll come to you at my 55th, my 60th, my 65th. We'll see how far we can go. I think if I had to leave people with any last words, is that to any person who's recently diagnosed with diabetes or has a kid who's diagnosed with diabetes, the answer is it's going to be okay. It's
I love
all
that.
going to be okay.
Absolutely, yes, because it's so scary. I know from my own personal experience, when I found out about my daughter, I was out of town. And I feel bad for the people that were staying at the hotel room next to mine because I spent the entire night up and sick because I was just so stressed and didn't know what was going on. And I can say, just as you, now that my daughter's 25, living a healthy, successful life, that it is going to be okay. So that's a great message to end on. So again, thank you. And I want to thank those of you that are watching. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your family and friends. And if you're living the breakthrough with type 1 diabetes and want to share your story, feel free to contact me and maybe you can be our next guest here on Living the Breakthrough. Again, thank you for watching and look forward to seeing you in a future episode. Have a great day.
Well, this was great. Thank you, Adrian.